Well, today on the show, we're going to talk to Anne Garrison, who is a previous recipient of this award. We're going to start, though, with a song that is a song for Madame Victoire Ingabire, and then we'll come back and talk to Anne Garrison.
Ingabire, Victoire, Ninoire, Victoire, Ingabire, Victoire, Ninoire, Victoire, Ingabire, Victoire, Ninoire, Victoire, Ingabire, Victoire, Ninoire, Watubere, Inoire, Ingabire, Direbe. Watubere intwari ingabire twirebera nkabo Yesu mukira ngaho babwira utubwire maze u Rwanda rubone ubugira amahoro
icyo mvuze ni uko kuba nanyuze hano nagarutse uyu munsi mu gihugu nyuma y'imyaka 16 ari amahano yarabaye mu gihugu uzi neza ko habaye itsembabwoko bakabitsembatsemba ntabwo rero nari kugaruka nyuma y'imyaka 16 mu gihugu cyabayemo ibikorwa nk'ibyo mu gihe ntari mpari ngo ndyame nsinzire ntabanje kunyura aho ibyo bintu byabereye ngo mbanze nkarebye kasuri indabyo nazanye ni urwibutso abarwanashyaka ba FDA inkingi ndetse n'ubuyobozi bwayo bwa politiki bwampaye bumbwira guti uhanyure ubwire abanyarwanda ko icyo twifuza ariko dufatanya gukorera hamwe tugakora ku buryo amahano nk'ayo y'amaraso atazongera kuba ni imwe twifuza ko amahano nk'ayo yongera kuba mu gihugu ni imwe no mu mpamvu yatumye FDA inkingi dufata icyemezo cyo kugaruka mu gihugu mu mahoro tutagombye gukoresha intwaro nk'uko benshi batekereza ko umuti w'ibibazo ari ugufata intwaro kuko ntabwo twemera ko kumena amaraso ariko kurangiza ibibazo by'umuntu amena amaraso aranamuhama ntabwo rero FDA icyo twifuza ni uko abanyarwanda dufatanya hamwe ibitekerezo binyuranye dufite ariko tugakora ku buryo amahano yaguriye igihugu cyacu atazongera kubaho biragaragara ko inzira y'ubwiyunge ikiri ndende iracyari ndende kandi koko urebye abantu bishwe muri iki gihugu ntabwo ari ikintu cyahita kirangira ako kanya nanone niyo urebye usanga nta ngamba ya politiki ihari ifatika yo gufasha abanyarwanda kugera ku bwiyunge kuko nk'ubu hano turareba kuri uru rwibutso ruragarukira mu by'ukuri ku bantu bahitanywe n'itsembabwoko ry'abatutsi aracyari uruhare rundi rw'itsembatsemba ryakorewe abahutu kuko nabo barababaye abantu babo bishwe nabo baravuga bati mbese ibyacu byo bizagerwaho kugira ngo rero tuzagere ku nzira y'ubwiyunge ni uko ako kababaro ka buri wese twumva ni ngombwa ko abatutsi biciwe abahutu babishe babyumva kandi bemera ko bagomba kubihanirwa ni ngombwa ko abantu baba barishe abahutu nabo bumva ko nabo bagomba kubihanirwa kandi ni ngombwa ko abanyarwanda mu moko yacu tuvamo anyuranye twumva ko tugomba gufatanyiriza hamwe mu bumwe mu bwubahane tukubaka igihugu cyacu mu mahoro ikikuzanye rero ni ukugira ngo dushake uburyo dufatanyiriza hamwe gutangira iyo nzira y'ubwiyunge dufatanyiriza hamwe gushaka uburyo akarengane gacika mu gihugu cyacu dufatanyiriza hamwe gushaka uburyo abanyarwanda twese tubaho mu bwisanzure mu gihugu cyacu murakoze
ndabona migambi yawe ari nk'iya Nelson Mandela cyangwa se iya Lumumba.
And we're back. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. And I'm Phil Taylor, and I think we are joined on the line by Anne Garrison, KPFA Berkeley and other places. Are you there, Anne?
Yes, I am, and congratulations on being awarded the Victoire Ingabire Umuhosa Democracy and Peace Prize on Saturday.
Thank you. And, of course, you are a previous...
So well-deserved.
Yeah, you are a previous winner, so I get to join the club and be a peer with yourself and others. By the way, Luc Marchal, it was good they reviewed at the program who has won this. And there's some wonderful people. David Himbara of Toronto now, who is a serious, let's say, insider critic of Paul Kagame's government in Rwanda and his treatment of Victoire. And, of course, he's done overall work. And he was a winner. And Judy Rever, who's contributed major articles at the Globe and Mail. And
her book, Wait, Wait, with Judy, you have to mention Her book is about to come out.
The book is coming out. Yes, it's
the book is coming out soon, published by Simon & Schuster, I believe.
You know, you and I and others have been talking about the Victoire Ingabire in a climate that is rather like the season change. I think there are more. We not only are speaking with more and more authority, more and more people, but there's also there are more ears and eyes following, because I think there's been a kind of a climate change in the way Paul Kagame is regarded, not by governments, but by the people. But Anne, I want to ask you, that's a great song. And did you produce that song?
Oh, no. I think I first heard it when I attended the Victoire Prize party in 2015. And then I found a copy and posted it to my SoundCloud page. But I'm not at all responsible for that. It's in Kinyarwanda, and then at least on the version that I posted to my SoundCloud page, which is Anne Garrison. You can find by searching for Anne Garrison SoundCloud. It's there, and it has the English translation of what Victoire is saying, what they're saying in the song, and what Victoire said in the middle. In the middle of it, they drop in her words about what she's trying to accomplish. Yeah.
Well, I thank you for introducing us to that song. I was aware there was a song, but you're the one who I'm going to call you the deputy producer, because you made it available to people. You, in my view, you're among the vanguard in breaking the news about her story, and you've written as much or more than anyone about her. Tell us, let's get the picture of who she is. She's been in prison for 8 years, and tell her story a little briefly, if you could.
Well, she was in the Netherlands at the time of the 1994 massacres, and she had been there to study, and she was quite accomplished. And then she became the leader of the community in diaspora, the refugee community, who had fled the Kagame regime, which took over at the end of the 100 days of massacres that many people think are the whole story, in Rwanda. Mm-hmm. And she gave up everything she had, and she had everything. She had a family, a husband and three children who adored her, who do adore her, and quite a bit of professional accomplishment. She had degrees in law and business and had a very good job with an international accounting firm. And she gave it all up to go back to Rwanda, and she said she was going back because she couldn't stand to see her people suffering so much under the totalitarian rule of Paul Kagame, the current president of Rwanda, who is the one who took over after a four-year war in 1994.
And then when
she arrived in... Mm-hmm. Go ahead. She arrived in Kigali, and the first thing she did was go to the genocide memorial, where she asked, where is the commemoration of the Hutu? Mm-hmm. And her essential message was that before, during, and after the genocide, Hutus were also killed. She never went so far as to call that genocide. Mm-hmm. And, of course, she had to, she had to make some effort not to get arrested in Rwanda, where there's a law about that, where you can't say double genocide, or you can't say Rwandan genocide, you can only say genocide against Tutsi. But she said before, during, and after the genocide, Hutus were killed. And that is not, for me to say that, that is not denying genocide. Mm-hmm. She also said, neither my party nor I have ever denied the Tutsi genocide. What we said, again, was that before, during, and after, Hutus were killed. Mm-hmm. And those who killed them should be held responsible for their crimes as well. As you know better than anyone else, the International Criminal Tribunal in Rwanda punished only Hutus who had just lost the war, the four-year war, to Paul Kagame's forces. Is that a good summary?
That's a very good summary. And
I'm getting better.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it's amazing. We're talking about a war and a political phenomena, and but also a super legal one where, you know, there are lawyers who fly by night who get who struggle to suppress political discussion of the events. And indeed, in Belgium today, they're debating whether, you know, an historian or a sociologist or an anthropologist can look into the events unless he sort of swears on a Bible not to say certain things or to even question what you might call an official account. It's a really a very troubling development. It's had, certainly we as broadcasters and whatnot there should be on that level. We need a kind of an ACLU phenomenon to remind people what speech is about and how you can't have a proper political culture if people cannot express themselves. But and she heroically confronted them. And by the way, so actually I should ask you to continue the story because she spoke up. She indicated she wanted to run for public office. Can you, you want to pick up the story there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she tried to run for president, and I met her because in 2010, I started calling Rwanda for KPFA radio and trying to figure out why they couldn't have a real election. Mm-hmm. What they were actually having was an argument about the genocide. And she was under house arrest within a matter of months, and she went back in January 2010. She was shortly under house arrest and forbidden to talk to the press, but she did anyway. The press were also forbidden to talk to her, but I was calling her from Berkeley, California, mm-hmm. and I kept doing it. And
well, by the
remarkable
way,
things.
This is Ann Garrison, and that's why you deserve that award, I got to say, because they recognized that you had made a journalist effort just to get establish who she was and what she was about. And she tragically, well, I don't know if it was a tragedy or a heroic story, but she wanted to be available to the press, but they silenced her.
Yes, and press there were afraid to speak to her. Finally, someone near the end of that year, someone from the London Prospect, which is part of the media conglomerate that includes The Guardian, called and asked me for contacts to see if she could find Victoire and speak to her because she was going on a junket, a journalist junket, where Rwanda was sponsoring, paying for the tour, and they were going to take them around to see and report on whatever they wanted them to see. But she was planning to sneak off and see if she could find and interview Victoire Ingabire, which she did. You know what? Ingabire.
I'm sorry, the last phrase again. What?
I said Ingabire. Yeah. I believe, you know, they let me pronounce it one way for a long time just because they were so glad I was reporting on it. No one corrected me, but I think that the proper pronunciation is Ingabire.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And
but she did. The woman from the London Prospect did go off and the Prospect or the Spectator, I can't remember, mm-hmm. but she went off and did interview Victoire.
Mm-hmm. And then was it the arrest come at when she announced for the running for office or was it associated with the interview? So what was their account of why they were arresting her?
They said they arrested her for terrorism. Well, I can tell you what the charge
was. Oh, terrorism,
for
that's right.
Yeah.
Woman who follows Gandhi, would turn out to be a terrorist. What do you know? Yes. Go ahead.
It's a terrorism collaborating with the FDLR in the Democratic Republic of the Congo to overthrow Rwanda. And
Paul Kagame, to be precise.
Oh, did I say Rwanda? Yes, yeah. To overthrow the government of Rwanda, specifically to overthrow the government of Rwanda, Paul Kagame's government. Mm-hmm. Also trying to inspire the people to rise up against the government.
Mm-hmm.
That was another one. And
which you can find out in the American Constitution, by the way.
Yes.
They're enthusiastic about that.
And the third was revising, minimizing, or denying the quote-unquote Tutsi genocide, the genocide against the Tutsi in 1994. And by the way, that's the phrase that they're trying to write in stone in Belgium. They're trying to make it illegal to call it anything but the genocide against the Tutsi in 1994.
Yes.
And this is the first time I've seen in 1994 added. And to me, that says they're thinking of Victoria's statements about the killing, which included the killing of Hutus before, during, and after.
Mm-hmm.
They want to say this all happened in 1994, as though it had nothing to do with the four-year war that ensued after Kagame's forces, with U.S. backing, invaded Rwanda in October 1990.
Yes. I'm really glad you make that point, because listeners should know that we're dealing with a fluid definition or account of the genocide. I can recall when Paul Kagame himself said that the genocide began in 1959, and by that he meant that when the republic was established and they agreed on majority rule and a parliamentary system, that led to a conflict, because at that time there had been a monarchy, which was Tutsi-dominated, and many left the country. And that, in his view, that is the beginning of the genocide. So people have to understand, you cannot escape the politicization of language. And it has been shifting according – it's almost like you can hear lawyers somewhere in off stage whispering because sometimes they're talking between 59 and 90, and then sometimes they're talking between 90 and 94. And then other times they will try to constrict it and make it merely 1994 with a very specific terminology. So it's inescapably a political environment. And these terms are fluid.
And they never talk about 1972 in Burundi.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The killings were on an immense scale, and it clearly should have been acted upon. All those international agencies that care about such things and focus on them needed to identify that as a genocide, but again, the matter got – is that too was politicized. The whole thing requires people – it's they have to pay attention, as it were. And for example, in the speech I made the other night, I pointed out but I didn't elaborate, of course, that two presidents were killed, the president of Burundi – and the president of Rwanda, which everyone agrees was the moment that triggered the violent events that followed. And the international community always likes to fold its arms and wag its finger at Rwanda and Africa. However, the United Nations did not conduct a full and proper investigation, and they have forgotten about it, frankly. It's like two presidents can be killed and no one it does anything.
Now, wait a minute, Phil. I remember what Tiffany Dixon said on your show.
Okay.
The ICTR told her that they don't investigate plane crashes.
That's right. By the way, Tiffany Dixon should win an award for just merely uttering very important truths such as that one. They did.
Book,
pardon me?
Robin's book, I believe, has a chapter titled "And It Shall Be Called a Plane Crash." That's not a chapter, he says that.
Yes, that's a
biblical phrase.
That's a biblical phrase.
Yes, exactly.
On that matter, yes, you're right. Of course, it did come up in court, which is you would think that the Security Council, United Nations Security Council, wouldn't require a court to tell them that two presidents had died. If we want to stay on that subject, I would point out that the president of Kenya at the time and other African presidents said, "We want to know who did that, because that is the perpetrator who," to quote Philip Renschens, "said that whoever did the deed of killing those two presidents should be in court for genocide because they would know the consequence of the of that assassination. But yes, in the larger context, the Security Council actually, in the original plan of the investigation, the investigation of the assassination was to be part of it. But when we got to court, that's when you heard the phrase that Tiffin Dixon cited, which is, "We don't investigate plane crashes." By the way, the man who said that is an American prosecutor. They had him there. He's originally from Ethiopia, so they called him an Ethiopian for the purposes of the trial. But in fact, he teaches law in, I think, Georgetown. I hope not, but he probably does.
Wait a second, Phil. I think we may – your audience probably knows this, but I think when we started talking about two Hutu presidents being killed, the president of Rwanda and the president of Burundi, we didn't say that they were killed when their plane was shot out of the sky.
That's right. Yes.
And that's what's never been investigated, who did it.
Yeah. I did say assassination, which is a crime.
Yes. I just made a mistake. It's not that it hasn't been investigated. It's never been charged and prosecuted.
Right. You see, you and I, as those who share this prize, International, and let's give all credit, International Women's Network for Democracy and Peace, people who are familiar with this are aware, as you are, of the details. And as you know, that's where the devil lives, along with the truth, the details. There was, of course, an investigation, and it was halted. Called to a cold stop by none other than Louise Arbour, a former Canadian judge who was at that time the prosecutor. And she had she was working happily with Mr. Hourigan and Amadou Dem, who were the investigators, and they came back with evidence that indicated that the Paul Kagame's RPF had been responsible for shooting down the plane and murdering the two presidents. And she called them to her office, one of them, Mr. Hourigan, now deceased, an Australian. And he was proud of his work and showed it to her. And he thought she was going to pat him on the back and send him back out to wrap the case up. But instead, she wrapped it up. She took the papers away from him, every document that he had, and said, "We're not going to go further with this." And that's why we have a heroic woman, Victoire Ingabire, who would like actually for all the truth to be told. I suppose that would be, if we were to talk about the reality, Paul Kagame is really unhappy with her because she's kind of a door. If you open that door, a lot of people are going to show up, including witnesses.
Let me tell you about the week or several days before she was imprisoned. I called her shortly after the 2010 UN mapping report came out, the UN mapping report on human rights abuses in the Democratic Republic of the Congo from 2003 to, I think it was 2010. And it said that Kagame's army had massacred Hutu refugees, 250,000 of them, in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and that crime would be indicted as genocide if it were taken to court.
Mm-hmm.
Or most likely, since the UN investigators are not prosecutors, but they said it would probably be charged as genocide.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to Victoire a few days after that was formally released, and it was the last time that I was able to talk to her, and I asked her to respond, and she said that she thought the UN should expand the mandate of the ICTR to include that time. Mm-hmm. And I believe she again said before, during, and after. But specifically in response to the report, she said they should expand the mandate to include these crimes in Congo.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's a very rational response. But then for the same report, I called Christopher Black and Peter Erlander, both of whom were ICTR defense attorneys at the International Criminal Tribunal in Rwanda. And they both said, oh, preposterous. They'll never do that. They'll never do that because too many people, too many powerful Western people will be exposed for collaborating and enabling.
Yeah. Well, indeed, that's, of course, been the case. Is that the sensitivity of the Washington and Paris and London, Brussels, to the opinions of the man, former Ugandan general and leader of the RPF in Rwanda, Paul Kagame, they are all sensitized to his wishes, which are their own wishes, by the way, as you point out. Collaboration or support for him and for that activity is highly problematic. So that's caused this situation where Rwandans, such as Victoire Ingabire Umuhoza, they need to be able to breathe and talk and understand and actually govern their own affairs. And they have this cabal of powerful people who say, no, you come to us and we will tell you what you can talk about and what you can't talk about. And this is a very unfortunate situation, although I must say again, the internet, I think around the world there is a greater and greater understanding of the reality. Judy Rever has done her work well in terms of the proper characterization of the type of government that is in Rwanda. And others have spoken up, because the International Women's Network for Democracy and Peace, they've highlighted this. They ought to, give themselves a prize. I mean, they really are remarkable people. I know you you went there. You spent a longer time. I was there for 4 days. I've been living in jet lag for about a week.
Well, I stayed to go and see the museum, the Waterloo Museum. That was a lot of fun. But no, they're wonderful folks. And for talking about this, I'd like to say they're brilliant organizers. That was some of the most brilliant organizing I've ever seen.
Yes,
because they created this event that keeps awareness of Victoire's situation in Rwanda alive, and it's a great party. You should tell anyone who's listening, who's ever considered going, you should go next year. It is a great party. And they're so warm and friendly to anyone who comes.
Yes. And go ahead. This is Anne Garrison.
And everyone who goes comes back with memories of the party and everyone they spoke to and new resolve to free Victoire.
Yeah. We sat down for some talks and speeches and banquet, and it started at 6:30, and I left a bunch of happy people at 2:30 in the morning. And among the people sitting there having a beer and waving at me happily were General Dindili Mana, one of the highest-ranking generals at the time in 1994, and Colonel Luc Marchal, the deputy commander of UNAMIR forces in Rwanda in 1994. And by the way, Anne, must share this. To be able to walk over and shake hands with those two, the general and the colonel, and to know that they agree with you, that they have the same concerns, not only about Victoire, but the whole history and about how tragic it is that their stories are not better known. By the way, anyone with a microphone who wants to get into business of journalism, go and sit down with them. It will not be the CBC. It will not be NBC. It will not be CNN, if that's the name of that outfit. But the truth is sitting there and two very sober, not that night, but two very sober, wonderful people who have never hidden their views about this matter and could shed so much light, and to see them being so enthusiastic. And the organization really ought to be congratulated by the International Women's Movement, because you want an illustration of women power and talent. You won't find a better one. And the two figures, by the way, and that leads us to, I think, a closing matter here. the world should know this. We're not talking about an ethnic dispute. We are talking about a Rwandan political issue of a militarist regime confronting its own people, because another name was, of course, spoken of that night and embraced. Two members of the family of Diane Wigara. Diane Wigara was arrested about 6-8 months ago in Rwanda. She is a Tutsi. She had been a supporter, she and her family, of the RPF. But she wanted to exercise her political right to run for president. And the matter she introduced was she thought Rwandan history needed to be revisited. She's open to discussion of the things that Victoire asked about, which is, are we going to have a proper accounting of what happened in 1994, where we recognize the suffering of all people in Rwanda? And her aunt, and as they say, auntie, was there, and another relative, and we'll get into that in future programming, but the crowd was predominantly Hutu, but it was also Tutsi. And so the two women leading the fight are from different ethnic groups, and they embrace one another, and their supporters embrace and support each other. And neither of those women is a violent woman or an advocate of violence. And it's just remarkable.
And two Tutsi Rwandans have won the prize, Deo Mushayidi and David Imbara. Mm-hmm. Deo Mushayidi is in prison in Rwanda, and David Imbara is there in Toronto, right?
He's in Toronto. And was identified by British intelligence as a target of the RPF for assassination.
Right.
They threatened to kill him. So, I mean, I would say, well, now we've reached the paved road, because this is not ethnic dispute. They have one thing in common. They're calling for a functioning democracy where you have opposition parties, an independent judiciary, et cetera. And they are keen admirers of one another. So this game of saying, oh, you can't talk about this. You have to use my words. We're now only talking about a general who says you will use my words. Whereas if you're talking about people who are Rwandans of Hutu, Tutsi, or Twa, they have a different opinion than the general. And so that's where the challenge is. Now he's facing a Rwandan challenge, not an ethnic challenge.
You're talking about General...
President General Kagame is facing.
Kagame.
He's actually confronting a united people in the form of Victoire Ingabire and Diane Wigara. Of course, and you and I both know that this is another matter. There are thousands of political prisoners in Rwanda. They are the most – we speak of them because they, in a sense, symbolically represent all the others.
When I looked into this in 2010, I wrote a piece about Rwandan prisons in the genocide ideology law. And at that time, Rwanda had the third highest per capita prison population in the world. Of course, ours here in the United States is first.
That's who they want to emulate.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
I want to be like you. Go ahead.
That's all. That was all I had to say. Well, and then the other thing I learned was that many of them were in prison for the genocide, for violating the genocide ideology law, which could mean something as simple as disagreeing with the government. Since the government's whole rationale is that it stopped the genocide and must prevent any similar tragedy from ever happening again.
It's actually a form of a monarchy based on a religio. I started to say religious, but the system goes this way. If you're critical of his holiness or his most mighty, his royal highness or president, then you must be a genocidaire.
Exactly. You just said that a lot better than I did. I'm writing something about this, about you and Charles Onana, the French author who was also given the prize on Saturday. And I was trying at the end to find the words for this, and I'm inclined to say that this Manichean oversimplification of what happened justifies the regime inside Rwanda, its horrific totalitarian repression, and its wars in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And we're supposed to believe that it was written on the tablets that God handed to Moses, the stone tablets.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's very apt. Yes, yes. And it's by this kind of mandate, there really is, you cannot raise any voice at all, because to question the leader is to commit a crime of 1994 or associate yourself with the alleged crime. And it's a wonderful mechanism for rule. And I don't think Rwandans accept it, based on what I saw in Brussels and you saw in Brussels. And by the way, I should praise Charles Onana, typically of someone who got a prize. I think I'm the only one that won one. But yes, he did. He's written many great things. He's quite well known in Europe. He was very popular. If you watch the videos, and it's available online now, of Charles and myself and others there, you will see that he's quite beloved. And he made the evening very enjoyable, along with, by the way, all the singing, the dancing. And again, to go back to your point, it was women from start to finish doing all the comedy except for Charles. But by the way, his comedy involved putting on a female attire from Rwanda and saying he was joining the International Women's Network, which I thought was that was a coup culturally. Anyway, and
no, there's one thing we should say there. I asked Charles and Joseph and Marcy once about, is there some way I should understand Victoria as a feminist? And they said, no, she's not a feminist because she didn't campaign on gender issues.
Mm-hmm.
She's a leader of people.
Mm-hmm.
And she is who she is for that reason.
And oh, yes. Yeah.
So, I was talking about this somewhere here recently and at an event for International Women's Day. And I didn't want to be drawn into suggesting that she is about the identity politics.
Not at all.
That so dominate our politics here in the U.S. right now.
Yeah.
Now I'll let you go. I know you have another guest.
No, I don't. Well, I have my colleague Phil Conlon, and we're going to take up other matters. But on that matter of Ingabire Victoire. And I congratulate you on mastering the pronunciation. But
you got me right.
Yeah.
Phil, I hear people, including Rwandans, pronouncing it all sorts of ways. So I don't know how definitive Ingabire is. But we'll keep working on this.
Well, I think it's great work. You and I should also learn French, shouldn't we?
We should. And one more thing about that part. Boy, I've got a big mouth today, don't I?
Yeah. But just on that last point, again, on the matter of her being a woman and a leader, that's why I say that all those who are insisting in our culture that this has got it's a dilemma that has to be solved and overcome, they can look to her and to Diane Wigara as examples, and because these are courageous women who are in prison because they're doing their political work. They're not feminists. They're doing their political work and being punished for it, and they're Hutu and Tutsi. And lastly on that point, one of the ways the public relations guys who are quite well paid, who work for Paul Kagame, try to help him out is to say half of the parliament of Rwanda is women, 50%. And the answer is yes. And those women have never uttered a word of support for these two women.
Right.
So does that mean they're women, or are they people who do what they're told by a man named Paul Kagame? Anne, it's great talking to you. Thank you for for your work, but also showing us to this song. We're going to play the song, and we hope to talk to you again soon in the future.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Okay. Bye-bye. Taylor Report, CIUT.